Can't just be us three.
It looks like that didn't happen to be accurate. Well, and then
last time she was on until 8:45.
You know, since I missed the last one, I guess it's only fair that
Oh, she missed the last one too.
Yeah, don't feel too bad for her. She missed
that
one.
Wasn't that the last one?
No.
She didn't get off work till 8:45.
I actually missed the last one, and then I found out that you missed it. I'm like, great, I did nothing wrong.
We're equally slackers.
Yeah, I think everyone slacked out on the last. I can't remember what I had going, but I was like, oh, I'm not going to make it. And then April told me, well, we're not doing it tonight. And I'm like, cool. Forget everything I said.
She's up and rising.
She's up and rising.
She's on her way to the stars. Ginning up devotion, riding that emotion to take her all the way up the charts. And I wanna be there.
I wanna be there.
If only just along for the ride. To see the adulation, the overnight sensation, catching all the looks in their eyes. We're on a weekend high. Now they're calling.
I hear they're calling.
Everybody's checking her out.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Comic Pop Visits, brought to you by Comic Pop Library. I'm Richard, along with
Lenny.
Logan.
And today we're visiting with Craig Greenberg. He is the musician that put out the recent album, The Grand Loss and Legacy. We did a review podcast on his album before, so Craig, thank you for doing this for us tonight.
Absolutely. Happy to be here. Talking to you.
One of the things we're going to be talking about is part of the songs that are on the album. This album is available. I want to get that out there real fast. And it is Grand Loss and Legacy. You can get it on his website, and that is at CraigGreenbergMusic.com. And you can get a digital download. And if I'm correct, you can also do the physical disc.
Yep.
Okay.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes.
I wasn't sure if I was correct when I was mentioning on the review podcast if you could get a physical copy or not. So,
yeah.
And you can.
Yes. So this is one, if you're a library out there or you just like a physical medium like April usually tends to like, you can actually go get the disc itself and put it within your collection.
You know, honestly, like I haven't actually bought a musical CD.
Really?
In this decade.
I just bought one last month.
That's good. And I mean, but I haven't bought a lot of music. To be honest, I do a lot of YouTube because it's free and I just watch their commercials. I'm going to be honest. Yeah. It's legal. It's free. They have commercials. You're getting paid. Everybody shut up. I like YouTube. But when we do buy music, we buy it for the iPod. It's just, you know, it's easier to own things digitally now. And I don't really understand why you would buy something that can still be scratched and destroyed whenever you can't scratch cyberspace.
Hold it.
That's true. Some people like to have the thing in their hands, the old school kind of feeling, looking at a package and the, but it is a whole, which is why, there are a lot of artists that just do digital releases now. Mm-hmm. And, we'll see when I do my next one, maybe I'll reconsider the packaging.
You were going to say, Logan?
For the actually buying a CD, there's also the cover of the CD thing, and
right. If
any booklets are in there, sometimes including lyrics.
Well,
if you're going to buy digital, YouTube. That's all you need for digital. There you go. It seems to me the only way you'd be getting any money is CD, so I have no clue how that digital
thing works.
I'm not
sure how YouTube operates in that. That's a strange entity, but it helps.
YouTube operates on credit from their commercialization. So basically, just like anything else, like even like Twitter, if you can get enough hits, like Colby Calais totally got famous and rich from putting a video on YouTube.
Right, but I'll ask Craig this. YouTube doesn't give you anything, though. They just allow you the space for free, basically?
I mean, if I opted to, I haven't yet put ads in my videos, but if I'm, you know, if I wanted to monetize it, that's, you know, I could have.
So he does have that option. See what I'm saying? It's all about the advertising, and that's Facebook. That's everything these days. That's where they make their bread and butter is. Let me put my stupid little Colgate ad on your beautiful song and this video that you've worked very hard on because you need money to live. You want to eat beans? Put my toothpaste on your video.
And it'll be exited out of every single time, but it'll still be there.
Like in 5 seconds, as soon as you can skip, everybody skips. Like they try to get as much commercial in that first 5 seconds as
there
they can.
There are some commercials that I'll actually watch.
True.
That's generally one time, and then the rest of the time I see that commercial, I skip because I already know what it is.
We usually don't dive off into this subject until later on in the interview, Craig. You got it early this time.
What do you mean? We dive off every chance we get.
I want to make mention that we like I said, we dived off, but we came in with a single Weekend Holiday off of Craig's album, and this one is definitely an upbeat song. It has, to me, kind of a summer song feel to it.
Yeah, a little bit. Song. Well, talk about being on a beach, and so I could see that reference, yeah.
It's one of those that it's really catchy, and it gets a hold of you, And as I said in the review podcast, I enjoy this music, and I'm not sure how to classify it. We kind of had a question about that, because it could be pop, it could be kind of folksy at times. So how would you classify your own music?
Yeah, because we don't know how to do that.
You know, I also just call it, you know, rock pop. I don't know all the. I mean, there's a lot more current, you know, breakdowns these days in music, but I don't know how better to define it than that. I mean, it's, you know, it's a little bit rootsy, it's a little bit jazzy, it's a little bit jammy, it's a little bit singer-songwriter.
I think it was a really terrible question. You're very evil. You're like Barbara Walters.
No, it's fair. I mean, you get it's fair question,
it is, but I know how hard that is. Like, when you're an artist of any kind trying to describe what exactly it is you do, you're like, I don't know, I just put the words out in the into the microphone and make it a music. I write, so, and when people ask me, well, what kind of book is, I'm like, the kind you read. What do you mean? It's not in Braille.
It's much easier to describe it in terms of, like, the elements of the music. Like, I can say it's you know, melody is important in there. There's some swing, you know, some shuffle and swing rhythmic stuff that's on there.
Yeah, I definitely heard that in Waiting to Hear. I heard a lot of jazz swing feel in that single.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that's definitely kind of a slow swing tune.
In the middle of that, you kind of do a shift, and
because
you do the oo-wahs or woo-wops, and it kind of felt like a throwback to the 70s Partridge Family stuff. For me, it's cool because that's what I grew up on. That's what I love. So it's like, this is great.
So right on.
You're introducing people to back into what used to be so fun.
It's definitely what I would call, and maybe I'm using the wrong word for this, so if I am, excuse me, everyone in the world. to me, it's eclectic, and to me, that means that it's very free, and you just kind of do what you want. You don't have something kind of binding you to a certain type, so you do hear a lot of different types. Because for me, you know, like, I do try to classify people's music on here. I never really have before. Pretty much whatever station, if it's on the country station, it's country. If it's on the pop station, it's pop. That's me. But, you know, like, as far as saying, you know, this is this particular subgenre or that, you know, I've been trying, because it's something that you like you said, it's something that's current, that people are, they're more subcategorizing music now. I'm kind of lost to that myself, to me, I think that it's I like the word eclectic, and that I think that describes it very well, if you take that to be defined as like kind of free-spirited music.
Okay.
With a rock backdrop. I mean, it definitely is rock music, but
I like that.
Like rock eclectic, if
you
that's
just
a thing.
Classified it.
See, that's what people keep telling me. Well, that's classifying. Well, I'm guessing. So if I'm wrong, tell me.
I don't think there's any wrong.
There's no wrong.
See, that's what I hate about art.
You're basically saying rock, etc.
Yeah, rock, etc.
And that works for anything that's rock and anything else.
And it also works for people that like Latin.
Right.
How long have you been in the industry? I think April was the one that did the bio and everything. You're out of New York. Are you still in that area, or have you?
Oh, I'm sorry. How long have I been in New York? Is it
right? And with
well, I've been.
All right. Is he in New York or out of? I'm just kidding.
I'm in New York.
That was a bad joke.
I'm in Brooklyn. I've lived in Brooklyn for about a little over 2 years, but I've been in New York City almost about 12 years now. And 12 years.
Do you feel meaner?
I also lived here 3 years when I was just out of college before I left to go live abroad for a bit. And so, but I've been in Brooklyn now for 2 years. Brooklyn's been my home.
Okay.
What was your comment?
Do you feel meaner after 12 years in New York?
Well, that's a good question. Well, I'm actually from...
Where are you from? If you're from Pittsburgh, I guess not, but...
Well, I've only met nice people from Pittsburgh.
I'm talking about Pittsburgh, Kansas.
I don't say that. What's that?
That, see, it's a running joke. And then you say, I know nice people from Pittsburgh, and I say, I'm talking about Pittsburgh, Kansas.
Oh.
Because there is a town called Pittsburgh in Kansas. It's actually a pretty big town.
You, Yeah, I thought we're supposed to be the egocentric ones here.
No, it's me. Sorry.
Kansas has a whole other state named after us.
Yeah, I mean, we have a state and a river named after us. What?
I know. Fly over state my ass. I don't know if it's New York, or I mean, I would say being in music and being, you know, being tossed around the music industry can make you a little bit meaner and a little bit cynical, and it's definitely made me tougher.
Yeah.
But I don't think people here are necessarily meaner. I think that if people are just a little more, you know, you have nice people here, it's just if you don't like kind of waste their time. Like if you want to ask somebody for something and you kind of hum and ha and you kind of don't get to the question very quickly, then you might get a less than friendly response. But if you can get out a quick, you know, question, or if you need help with something, but you kind of do it, and I think you'll find people are just as nice here. As it's a little bit of a misconception, you know, with, you know, but it is a hard place, and it will make you harder than if you lived in, you know, I don't know,
other places,
or I mean, you know, any place. I'm trying to think of.
No, I think Los Angeles is definitely the soft end of that stick. Yeah. If I was interviewing somebody from Los Angeles, I would totally play the other role with them.
Yeah,
I'm just the devil. Sorry.
No.
Yeah, we're the ones.
It's
I can't take him seriously with you wearing that hat. I just want you to know that.
He can't see you.
He's literally wearing a Pikachu hat.
Ears and all.
And we're the ones who mixed M&Ms and Skittles.
True. One of the things with living in New York compared to LA, just kind of do it a comparison, see what you think. With your music the way it is, and
yeah,
find it as eclectic. I think L.A., you definitely would be a poppy, and that would influence your music more.
Yeah.
But being in New York, I think that's why it's more eclectic, and you're just you're vibing off all the different communities there. Is that true?
Yes, I would say, actually that is one of the ways I describe it. I do think it's, to me, it sounds like New York in a way, because it does have some, you know, there's swing elements and the fact that that I kind of take a little bits and pieces from different, you know, different kinds of music. I think that's actually something you hear in a lot of, you know, I mean, you hear it in like someone like Paul Simon's work or Billy Joel. People take from different, you know, bits and pieces. So
it definitely feels like you have the water on the east side of you. That's for sure. It's got an East Coast feel.
Good. I mean, I'm glad that that you guys pick up on that, because I tell that to people now, and I mean, I guess because I don't know if it's like, you know, people that are kind of in the hip indie scene here, you know, I never really fit into that, you know, so but I am from New York, so to me it feels like where I'm from, you know, and having made the record here, and so yeah, I'm glad that you guys kind of, you know, feel that. It's got a little bit, of an urban, to, you know, and a little bit of attitude, and And I think that's kind of what's my sound, you know, it's evolved when I was, you know, it definitely, I think that's definitely broad, you know, has been more accented and has come out more as the longer I've been in New York. I feel like I've kind of, it has influenced my sound a lot as opposed to when I first started singing when I lived abroad, and my stuff was definitely had a different tone, different feel to it. So it's a little edgier now, and you know, life has, you know, thrown me some curveballs in the last bunch of years, and I think that all comes into it too.
Oh shit!
But yeah, I mean, but I am glad that it has a, you know, has a place to, you know, feel to it.
And you mentioned curveballs. The single "That Girl Is Wrong for You." I don't want to be intrusive, but is that a little bit autobiography in there? Because
it is actually
with, you know, the lyrics.
What's that?
It gets a little personal with the lyrics in there, and it's like, ooh. I think the really.
Yeah, well, it's written in the, you know,
observer thing,
like second person, I guess that would be. But no, it is actually autobiographical. I mean, it's in it, but it's not. It's actually, it's kind of amalgam of a couple of women that I've dated, and it's kind of like I've made, you know, kind of the same mistake more than once with, you know, kind of falling for the same kind of person, and that's kind of what, you know. But it's funny because everyone always, that's the song that most people think, like friends of mine think it was written about them, like that I was like
no, it's written from their point of view.
You can feel free to correct me if I'm wrong about this, but I feel kind of like people are misconstrued when they read something like poetry or music, not necessarily read it, but listen to it if it's music, obviously. whatever, quit looking at me, Richard. In the second person, because as an artist, when you're writing poetry or music or something like that, a rap, and you use the word you, because you're writing it, even if it's music, so a piece of paper to a writer is like a mirror. So when you say the word you, you're actually more often than not referencing yourself, whereas even if you're using the first person, you may not at all be referencing yourself, and it's just a character, and I'm talking about in music here, but or in poetry, because the second person doesn't really work in any other type of writing, in my opinion. But
Well, you put yourself out there with that song, because the reason I stumbled onto that was because your one lyric of it was, you know, she'll put your music down in front of your friends, and I'm paraphrasing there, of course, but it's like, ouch, that sounds a little close to home there.
Yeah, no, that was...
Yeah, just keep rubbing dirt in it, Richard. I'm sure that doesn't hurt at all. No, I'm just kidding.
She's no longer in the picture.
She walks by in the background. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, no, it is someone, you know, it's in the past when I, you know, I guess it was a transition, you know, for me from before I, you know, was really doing music seriously, and I think I was, you know, I came to realize that trying to be with somebody that doesn't support, you know, kind of fully what I do, and I think that was, you know, thinking that I could find this, you know, person that's a little more straight and narrow, and whenever I kind of go for that, it never seems to work out. So
people try to portray straight and narrow, but I don't know if too many people are truly straight.
Say it again.
People try to say they're straight and narrow, but I don't know if they can actually say they truly are.
Yeah.
I'm going to say this to you on that, Craig. I feel you on that, homie. That's for true right there. I think that makes for great music.
Yeah.
That's what I was thinking back to when I listened to it. You know, that's those kinds of lyrics and those kinds of songs, that's what speaks to people, because that's, you know, whenever it's something that's real and comes from your life, you know, and it mattered enough to go into a song, so it obviously came from the heart, you know, that really translates in music, and that's a beautiful thing. It's tragic that it comes from, usually 900% of the time, from sadness, that kind of inspiration seems to come, but it translates really well. It really, the effect in the music is brilliant.
Yeah.
At the very beginning, if I remember right, you kind of snuck it in there that you're a writer. You're not just a musician. You're actually doing your own stuff here.
Yeah. You mean, yeah, all the songs are...
I caught that. I knew he was... I knew he wrote them all.
Oh, yeah. No, everything on this record is... I mean, I do some co-writing, but this record here is all my music and lyrics.
Have you recorded any cool covers?
I have not on record, but there's a lot of actually I did record one cover for tribute album to a songwriter friend of mine. Actually, you know, if you know the name, the band Timbuk 3 from the 80s.
It seems like I was born in 80. Seems like I should know them.
That song, My Future's So Bright, I Gotta Wear Shades.
Yeah. Okay, yeah.
So
I knew I heard a Timbuk 3.
Yeah.
So that's their song, really?
The guy who wrote that song, I know, puts on this songwriter event every year. Actually, I'm going in a couple weeks. It's in Wisconsin. And
free plug.
And anyway, so it's this songwriter festival, and it's all these different writers that get together and write these songs. And this guy Pat from the band who wrote that song a year ago, there was a surprise tribute record made to him. So all the writers from this event recorded songs of his, and so I recorded one from the Timbuk 3 album that went on this compilation album. But otherwise, there's a lot of, you know, I do covers quite a bit, and there's a bunch of clips on YouTube, you know, live versions, but nothing nothing studio recorded.
Right on.
At this point. Yeah.
Right on.
Yeah. One of these days.
Yeah, covers are cool. I mean, it's cool. It's better to write your own music, but, you know, sometimes a great cover will make it, you know, make a 15-minute star out of you, then you don't got to worry for the rest of your life.
Yep. Yeah.
So it's cool that you do them.
Yeah.
I've heard some really great ones, and you have... You're so talented that I would assume that you do really great cover work. And so now I'm going to go on YouTube because it's free, and I'm going to look for your covers.
Yeah. And they're definitely one thing I'll say, like, you know, I tend to, you know, at this point anyway, like songs that I can kind of put into my, you know, when I do them, they kind of sound like me because, you know, I can't really sing them the way that they originally sounded. That's just kind of by you know, default that they, you know, it's like, oh, well, people be like, wow, that's an interesting version. I'm like, well, that's really the only way I could sing this song.
No, that's so cool. That's what I was hoping for. I like it when people change the sound of a song.
Yeah.
I would think that's the purpose of covers because you've already got the original version sung by the band.
Sometimes it's cool for me whenever somebody does like a different version with a similar sound. Mm-hmm. But I usually want it, like, if it's a country song, for it to be a rock version, but with the same sound, the same, you know, lyrical sound. But I think it's weird that we're bringing this up because right after we listened to your music, I was like, God, you know who this guy reminds me of? He's so much fun. I don't know if you've ever heard of Richard Cheese, and this is not an insult at all, but he does really hard music.
Richard Cheese,
yeah.
Richard Cheese.
Yeah, but he's been in the movies, so he's been in the movies.
He's made his cheddar.
All I'm saying is that he's really cool. Like, the song that I heard from him first was Disturbed's Down with the Sickness, but this guy, you got to understand, this guy's a lounge singer.
Mm-hmm.
So he did Down with the Sickness to lounge music, and it's brilliant. And that was actually in the 2001 Strike Cinema Dawn of the Dead, the Richard Cheese version of Down with the Sickness, and it's really amazing because it's, and that's just what I'm talking about. It's he does lounge music, so he'll take whatever music and cover it to lounge music. I'm not saying you're like lounge music. I just think, you know, like that's it's similar in
I'll have to check that out. But that's definitely yeah, I definitely prefer when people just kind of sing the originals the way they were written. It's kind of, less than interesting for me.
Yeah, I think it's better when they do their own thing. At least you got to do something with it that's original. Otherwise, you really are just copying. Even though it's a cover, it's still kind of not cool.
Yeah.
I think the one person that I mentioned that you reminded me the most of, because I grew up with him, was Randy Newman.
Yeah.
And your sound is very, very reminiscent of his. And I always loved his music. So when I got your album, when you sent it to me, and I, you know, we did your first two music videos, and I liked it. Then when you were nice enough to say, hey, would you mind listening to the whole album? I was like, oh, yes. The reason I love it is kind of like what Hal Lenny said. It's a little, it's different, but it's different in a good way for me because it's just so enjoyable. It can be lighthearted, but you can also get serious with it. Mm. And to me, your voice compared to his was a little bit slurred, but your voice is clearer. So I can actually do the lyrics and actually pick up and sing with you with more ease than what his was like back
then. Yeah, you do have a really crisp sound. Like I say, it's high quality music. No matter, even if I can't classify it, it's quality music.
That's what I enjoyed about your album because it was so reminiscent of his, but I could get into the music so fast and I could pick up the lyrics because your voice was so crisp and clear.
Oh, wow. That's a compliment. I like that, yeah.
It was really nice, and that's why I said I'd be, you know, put it in the car and I'd be singing, you know, while I'm just driving around town or on a trip. So, and that's what I look for when I'm looking for car music is something that I can get into and have fun with. So,
sorry about ruining that for you that one time.
That's all right, man. So I appreciate you doing that for us and sending your album. It was a great treat. So thank you.
Sure.
One of the things with you being an instrumentalist, it seems like, are you familiar with most of them, but it seems like your go-to instrument is the piano?
Yeah, mainly write on piano and kind of it's become my main instrument, although I'm actually, the first instrument I played really seriously was a guitar. So, but since I've been back in New York, piano's been my main instrument. When I lived abroad and, you know, was much...
Couldn't carry around a piano? Is that what you're trying to say?
Yeah, so I did much more guitar-based stuff. But that's actually, and you know what, to me, that's another reason why I think it comes out to be, you know, New York-sounding to me, because I just very much associate, I mean, obviously piano is known for a bunch of places, but you find that a lot of music that has piano tends to be a little more nuanced and a little more... I don't want to say specific, but like you tend to use more like half tones in music in you hear more of that in piano based music as opposed to guitar, which is, you know, because guitar is very much a rhythmic instrument and people kind of strum chords. It's much easier to do slight variations and be more subtle and have, so it's a little, it's a less, guitar is more of a crude instrument in a way, you know, piano is more refined.
I think I understand what he's saying.
Yeah.
What I was going to throw in there was that do you feel like, you know, coming back to New York, it's kind of more of the sound there, but do you feel like also you're taking your music a little more seriously? So you're arranging music and doing a lot more time songwriting. And I feel like most people that songwrite do use a piano while they're songwriting, no matter what instruments they play. I mean, practically all of them. And even if they don't really play the piano as their main instrument.
Yes, that's true. I think, and if you were to look at the number of, you know, the biggest songs of all time, I think the percentage of them that are written on piano is probably
pretty high up there.
Pretty high. Yeah.
For the first 1800 years of music, definitely. And then after that, some of them too.
Right. No, but I mean, it's just the way it's laid out as an instrument and the way it's, you know, very, you know, it's just like you're looking at it in front of you. Guitar, it's like, it's not really made to, like, even look at your hands. It's really made to look out at an audience, you know? I just equate it more with New York being, you know, a relatively sophisticated place in a lot of ways, although it's obviously very... I'd say that it has a lot of range in it as a place. There's a lot of variety. There's a lot of, you know, range of people, of culture. So I think the piano kind of more follows that, you know, as an emblem, you know, or, you know, basically like there's a word that I'm trying to think of that would really make sense right now, but I can't think of what it would be. Not an icon, but like something like that. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
I don't know. I think icon's pretty close to what you're looking for.
No, but it's a smart word, and I'm totally at a loss for it right now. So imagine I said this really smart word, and then...
Oh, yeah, I see that. Yeah, there you go. And when you think of it, just shout it out, and we'll edit it in.
Yeah, it'll come to me. It'll come to me.
I was just going to make a comment with going with the piano. When I was listening to the music, the notes that I took was that in some songs it was light and airy, and really poppy. You know, it just popped off the piano. But then there are others where it has a richer sound, a fuller sound.
So right.
It's really nice. And I think that's where you're saying the piano has such a wide range.
Yeah.
And most people don't realize that a piano would have that.
It's yeah. And the other thing that why it became my, especially as my music started becoming more involved, and I started I really write a lot of my stuff for a band, like the songs on this record especially. And because on piano with my left hand, when I'm doing especially like a song like That Girl Is Wrong For You, that, you know, my left hand is driving that rhythm, and you could kind of think of that as the drum and the bass.
Right.
Like sure. Boom chet, okay. Chet, boom chet, boom chet. Like, so that rhythm, you know, it's kind of like I have the whole band at my fingertips when I'm playing the kind of stuff on the piano. So that's kind of why my piano music has definitely been more band driven music for that reason, which is good. But at the same time, some of my piano songs don't hold up as well to play them without a band, you know.
Okay.
They don't translate as well. Like Weekend Holiday, to try to do that song solo is kind of tough. It just doesn't really, it's a song based on hits, you know, and you know, it doesn't quite translate as well, you know.
Do you play with a band normally?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I do solo stuff, but I do have a band. And sometimes it's a 3-piece, sometimes it's a 4-piece. I like to be versatile. I like to, you know, if it's a small, like I like to be able to do, like I'm doing a solo tour next month with another songwriter friend. And that's, you know, that example, like, there are songs on this record that I won't play because they just won't work as well solo, whereas the other ones I can, you know, kind of do work. And I'll be playing some of my older stuff too, because, I'll be doing a couple on guitar, and most of my older songs are on guitar. But again, those work better solo. So,
but they were written to be solo on a guitar, so that would make more sense for them to be solo.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, when you go out and play in a live theater, do you stick with your piano, or do you have somebody that also can jump in for you and you can actually stand up and be the front man with just the mic occasionally, or is it pretty much
because
what I'm picturing in my mind is like Elton John and Billy Joel. They do everything pretty much right at the piano.
Yeah, but they both, yes, although Billy
steps out more, probably.
Billy steps out and he'll play one on guitar, and he actually ran around like a madman back in the heyday. But early on, he didn't do that at all. I mean, early on, he was behind that piano the whole time. So if I get to have a road show that's that level of production, you know.
Accompaniment.
it is definitely a little, I'm not going to lie, singing without an instrument in front of me is not the most natural thing for me. It's still a little bit, you know, I have done it and I've gotten better at it, but I do feel a little bit, you know, naked when I don't have, you know, when I'm not playing at the same time. But it is something I want to work on more because, you know, it is, I mean, I have done it. I have just fronted,
with a mic.
What's that?
With just you and a mic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like fronting a band. I don't think I'm, you know, I mean, I kind of just stand at the mic. I'm not like doing rock star moves, really.
Rock star moves are overplayed.
What's that?
Rock star moves are overplayed.
Yeah, they are. But, you know, when you get to the bigger venues, like that was the one thing I know. Like,
those ladies want to see is shake the hips.
Yeah. Well, it's also, I mean, it's just, you know, people don't want to just, which I get, you know, just looking at musicians play, it doesn't really translate to a wider audience. And that's why, like, you know, there's stories like Bruce Springsteen.
Yeah, Elvis really killed it for white people.
Some, you know, big executive guy was like, you know, you're not moving around enough, you're not, you know, and then he became a madman on the stage. And then, like, he, like, saw that executive a year later. He's like, am I moving around, you know, am I moving for stuff? And so, I mean, so it's basically, that's definitely something that those artists did when they got to bigger stages. So if and when that, you know, I'll work on that when it, you know, gets to that point.
I could totally see that standing up there without the piano is kind of like a shield, isn't it? Or like, a very oddly shaped, oversized crutch, and you can kind of be like, okay, the piano's here, so obviously I know what I'm doing because I have a piano.
And also, I mean, for me, truthfully also, I mean, I consider myself a musician, songwriter, singer, like in that order.
Sure.
You know? So, because really singing was the last thing I really started doing, and I know I, you know, I feel I've come a good way with it, but I don't feel like, you know, it wasn't something like, it was definitely the last thing I did, and it was partly out of necessity, and so I consider myself a musician songwriter who sings.
You know? Well, it works for you.
Yeah.
And see, that's what I was going to say when you mentioned the musician. It's like, I think the people that have a little bit of music in the background recognize the musicianship and appreciate just the piano and you behind the piano, where the people that are more listening more, they're the ones that are more apt to wanting to show and have the entertainment.
Yeah.
And because
the layman,
well, not necessarily the layman, because everybody walks of life will just listen.
Yeah.
It could be any culture background.
Sure.
No, come on, you know, this is America. We like big productions and shows and stuff. So.
Yeah,
because it's like
blow shit up on stage, man.
Would Garth Brooks be as big without his stage show?
No, no one would be.
No,
I'm telling you. Elvis killed it for white people. We can no longer just stand there and make beautiful music. Now we have to shake our ass as well.
Yeah.
Sorry, blame Elvis. It's not my fault.
And then MTV did another round of murdering.
Yeah. Super murder. But that was the best kind of death.
And now you could argue the YouTube generation has been the final blow, I think. Another thing that's just changed it, you know.
Yeah, now you have to be able to do it in your pajamas from your bedroom when you're 15.
Yeah, which is interesting because, you know, I'm of the age where I didn't grow up, you know, on YouTube, and I don't feel the most, you know, there are artists today that they go a long way just because they're able to market themselves on that little video screen. Mm-hmm. And it's a totally different thing than what I grew up trying to do. You know, I played my instrument, you know.
These kids are like keyed for it, like their fingers move faster. It's like they have extra fingers.
But it's also like there's something to be said for me, the hours I put in, I mean, when I was really just a guitar player in high school and college, like totally on my own, like in the, you know, obscurity and like not thinking about what, you know, what it looked like. I mean, it was just, you know, the sound and the feeling of playing your instrument. So it's such a different thing now, you know. It's, I mean, there are obviously still people that, you know, really learning an instrument is a goal, but there's also people that you know, it's just, they don't, it's not as important, you know. They spend, because they know they can just market something. And I'm not.
Yeah, I mean, if you can shake your hip, if you can shake your hips and you have auto-tune, you got a hit, so.
Right, exactly. So that's just the reality of what it is. So, which is why, you know, I accept my space in it all, you know, why maybe the potential for, you know, how big it could get, you know, I'm aware of those limitations in a way, just because, you know, but that's okay. I've come to terms with that.
When you were starting out, did you learn music later in life, or were you actually, you know, in your music classes as a kid in school?
So I always did something like, I actually played violin as a kid in elementary school for a few years. So that was really the first musical thing. And then
who
I was
the
like,
parents gets them a violin in elementary. I'm sorry, Craig. I believe you. I totally believe you. And like, you hear it from a lot of musicians, but like, maybe I could be a musician too if I would have got, like, I got Legos when I was in elementary school. I didn't get no violin.
And here again, you know, I think that's a little bit of a East Coast,
for sure.
Maybe Northeast thing. Like, there's, I think, you know, and this actually plays into it too. I heard, like, my father, I heard a lot of classical music from, and also some Broadway. So music, I think the a lot of people in New York tend to be a little more connected to the
musical,
like,
heritage.
Classical music influence is more felt here, and I think that definitely seeped in there. And you know, the music programs around New York, I think I wasn't aware of it at the time, but looking back, especially compared to like how they've been stripped and you know, eradicated now. So I feel, you know, I had a pretty good education with that early on, even, you know, at a public school. But yeah, so but I you know you had to either play a string instrument or a horn instrument at third grade. I think it. I mean, I'm trying to think if it was mandatory or not. I'm not even 100%. But anyway, I played violin for about 4 years, but then I quit in sixth grade because it just wasn't cool to be in orchestra in sixth grade.
Sure, man.
And I actually blame my parents to this day for letting me quit. I'm like, why did you let me quit? And then I played a little bit of drums.
Because that's cooler.
The first band, technical band I was in was actually like sixth or seventh grade. And I was set to be the drummer. And we jammed a couple of times at a friend's garage. And I really loved... I took like a lesson or two at this a little camp I went to in the summer. And I remember taking a couple lessons and just really liking it. And then I think there was no way my parents were going to get me a drum set. So I think that's that's what kind of ended that direction.
Are you saying they didn't love it as much as you did?
Yeah.
Oh, the drummer's hell.
Yeah. And then the next thing was really picking up a guitar around age 15, and that's when I kind of really got into it.
So it was there your whole life, at least in the backdrop. There was some music going on.
Yeah, there was a lot of, there was definitely there, and I also did some other, I actually did a little bit of acting and stuff like that when I was a kid also. So I was always doing something, there's some kind of performing, some kind of something, musically creative, but... It didn't really get serious until, I was about 16, 17, and then it was, it was full-on, music nerd immersion at that point.
So how long did you spend in Europe?
You said
abroad. I assumed Europe. Well, am I wrong?
I was in Latin America, and then I was in Europe.
Okay, so you did spend time in Europe.
Yeah. So it was a year and a half in Latin America, and then a year in Spain. And I remember you guys in your interview last time, which was a fair question, how did I get to those places? But I was teaching English.
Okay.
It's kind of a long story, but basically before I was really doing music in New York and I had a real, quote, real job, I was pretty unhappy, you could say, and... And not only unhappy, but I was like, actually, I had a little bit of a health issue when I was in my early 20s. And I knew it was based to being, came from being in New York and being stressed out and not knowing, knowing I had something else to do, but not having had the music kind of all come together at the time. Mm-hmm. So having this issue is what made me decide to leave New York and... basically, I decided if I was going to be a songwriter, I kind of had to go out and have some unique experience. And I had this buddy living in Chile, down in South America, and who was really loving it. He was teaching down there, and he convinced me to come down there. I mean, I wanted to go away. I wanted to get out of New York. I wanted to travel a bit and kind of see another culture and another, kind of life in another place, because I thought if I, I had to have unique experience. If you're going to be in the arts, you have to have something unique. And what happened was this original plan, which was was going down there for a few months. Is after a few months, I got hired in my first gig, playing in a bar like three nights a week, playing covers.
Year and a half later,
so that led to me staying there another year because. I did this gig three nights, and then at one point I was playing six nights a week, and I started with like seven or eight cover songs, and by the end of that time, I had about 150 or something. So that was really my education, it's like I went back to school for music, because that's when I really became a musician, a professional musician.
Well, it seems like you did the right thing.
Yeah,
I think I did. I mean, I know that I might have been, became a songwriter. I mean, a serious songwriter if I hadn't left, but I would not have been a performing musician because I would not have gotten the gig I got down there in New York. I know that for a fact because I wasn't good enough at the time. I think. So that was why I left New York. I mean, that's the other thing is because growing up here and knowing the kind of high level of talent, and it's just kind of like I felt too overwhelmed to start here.
Yeah,
felt too intimidated to start here. It's easy, you know. You have a lot of people that come to New York from Kansas or from anywhere in the middle of the country, and
that's not cliche at all, is it?
No, not at all. And
I had a great idea for a story about that. I'll tell you about sometime. But keep going.
But you know, they come here, and but it's, you know, for me having grown up here, it just felt like I don't know. I just was too. I felt too overwhelmed by it, and so I kind of need to like kind of set myself free from my, you know, from my mindset here. And I can say for sure, if I hadn't left, I wouldn't. Yeah, I mean, I had an opportunity. You know, it was a window of time, and I very easily could have missed it. So I'm very lucky in that sense. You know, yeah.
I like all that stuff you said, and I have a story that is a little bit similar in the fact that. I can really appreciate that mentality because I've actually, you know, aspired to do a lot of artistic things myself. But I was at a convention in Chattanooga, Tennessee, and I was talking to a woman from Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting how people will judge you if you're from Kansas. Like, yeah. Are you on your way to New York or have you already been? But the whole joke is, if you're from Kansas, are you on your way to New York or have you already been?
Right.
And the funny thing is I have been to New York, but it's before I was ever lived in Kansas as an adult. So, but the thing is that like this lady, and she was a nice enough lady, but, I was very new at what I do now, which is very little. What exactly do I do, Richard? Oh, I'm a writer.
Enjoy life.
I enjoy life. That's right.
You enjoy games.
That's good.
I was talking to her about the art of writing, and she actually suggests, she's like, well, you need to get into the world, and like, you know, you're from a small out of the way place, because she asked me where I was from, and I said I'm from Kansas. Well, I did go on that trip from Kansas, and I had lived here for a couple of years, but I've also lived in Europe, and I've also spent a little bit of time in New York and in New Orleans and a lot of time in Florida. I grew up mostly in Florida and East Texas, and I've never been anywhere besides Europe, Canada, and the United States, but I've been all over the United States and actually lived in some pretty... I got some stories I could tell you, brother. And I'm sure after a year and a half in Chile, you got some stories, too. And from other things, you were talking about a problem or whatever that was. And I can tell you that I think all artists have that, or at least a form of problem that they have to kind of... you know, I felt very much as a young man the very same thing, that I need to go out and live life and see stuff and do stuff. And I was just, when you were talking, I was thinking, I did that too. I learned to bleed. So, you know, and honestly, like, I really feel like that's something that's a valuable lesson that I have from life that a lot of people don't have, because I know how to bleed. And I'm a writer, so I write about blood, and I write about it very convincingly. And so, you know, that's just, you know, but being a musician, that's awesome that you could be in that circumstance and then kind of go back to New York and be like, let me show you what I got. And then, you know, add the New York experience. So now you have a very quality show and a very impressive album. I've only heard the one album. Like I say, I want to get on YouTube and check out some of your other stuff, but very impressive album. So obviously the things you did musically and in your life to get you propelled to where you are today is you're doing well, because like I say, you've made a great album, and hopefully that's going to parlay into a nice career for you.
Yeah. Hopefully, yes.
You know, God and the evil one willing.
No, it's true. I mean, it was a lot of stuff I was reading at the time. Also, very into a lot of stuff by Carl Jung and individuation. And it was
just
stuff that I was reading about, you know, really needing to kind of go off and have unique experience. And I still believe today, you know, it's not, you know, being an artist, you have to have your own thing. You have to, you know, you don't have to be the best technically, you know. I mean, obviously I've, you know, I like musicality in my music, so it's something I pay attention to, but even if you don't, it doesn't matter. I mean, to me, I think one of the reasons I, you know, am into musicality is because it's, if I could just sit there and sing like just two chords and still have it work as well, then hey, I probably would have done that. But it just, for me, I was interested in more kind of intricate music growing up. And so it was kind of adding, you know, I think I found, you know, we all find our things out of necessity. And
sorry, man, we weren't all born Justin Bieber.
Right. Right. But you know, it's, and I just think that's kind of a shame today with so many kids, because they don't, you know, I was very fortunate. But again, if I hadn't been sick, I mean, and it wasn't that, I just, you know, I had like a stomach thing, like a pre-ulcer thing, basically. And it was all stress, and it was just being in New York and not knowing what the fuck I was doing. And that's what made me, you know, but also knowing that I had some other purpose. And that kind of cognitive dissonance, you know, fucked me up at the time. So
I had rampant self-destructiveness, so my stomach was fine, but I like to, you know, do drugs and ruin my life occasionally. So.
Right. Well, that's another way, you know, it happens for different ways for different people.
Yeah, it does. And, well, and I mean, I think that's, you know, it's a growing pain for artists, just like every, you know, when you're any other kind of person, say you're a carpenter. Well, life's pretty shelled out for you. You know, you make a chair. When people sit in the chair, they're either comfortable or they're not. They either buy your chairs and you get a nice house and a fat wife and a happy life, or they don't buy your chairs, you end up living in a box that the chair came in. But when you're an artist, it's not about, can I make the world's most technically comfortable chair? It's, you know, can I make you the most uncomfortable in the worst chair and have you love me for it and pay me somehow to keep doing that to you? And that's really what we do, isn't it? We try to take people out of their comfort, make them emotional, make them cry. I mean, you really want people to cry when they listen to your music, right? That's the ultimate goal. Because when they're crying, you know they love it. And so that is... You know, when that's your goal in life, is to disturb people emotionally, you know, it's like, okay, well, yeah, good luck, you know, and there's a lot of people that want to do that. And I think half of them don't even know that that's what they want to do. So it makes for a fucked up childhood. I mean, I can say that on our program.
Yeah.
Right? Because they tell you, they tell you when you're a kid, what are you going to be? No, that's stupid. You're not going to make any money at that. And I'm like, well, I didn't say I wanted to make money. I said what I wanted to do with my life, you know, and that's something that as an artist, you're like, money, you know, all you can think of is, of course I'm going to make money. I'm brilliant.
Well, I'm not going to, first off, I do agree that, I mean, yes, there are, you know, making somebody cry, but I mean, I don't think like, I also, you know, to me, a good lighthearted pop song has as much value as a song that makes somebody cry. And, you know, so it's not only that emotion, but I do think that there is, probably the best artists of all time have done that quite a bit. I mean, I always, for me, I viewed it as kind of expressing some of my joy. You know, it's kind of one of the ways I look at it. But because, you know, music should be joyful too. It doesn't have to be, you know.
When I say cry, I don't. Whoa, that's some feedback. When I say cry, I don't mean necessarily.
I think you mean like feel something.
Feel the feeling. When you see tears in their eyes, you know it's working. Otherwise, you have to just listen to them say, "Yeah, I liked it," or whatever, you know.
Right.
Clap. But when the crying is just the easiest to know you've done your job. I'm not saying necessarily that that's the only emotion you want to elicit from people.
Yeah,
it's the only emotion I want to elicit. But I'm
song like That Girl Is Wrong For You. I don't think I'm, you know, anyone's gonna get too choked up about, they might laugh about the situation.
Laughter is also really good.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I like that component in art. And because the truth is, I mean, I'm you know, I can go deep into things, but I do have a darker elements of, you know, my personality, but I'm definitely not the most brooding, you know, when you think of like a brooding artist, you know, I never really fit that profile either. I'm kind of lighthearted, a little bit happy-go-lucky. But my point of that is being, it doesn't matter what you are, as long as you can get your essence out there, you know, so there's no right or wrong with art, you know, whatever you want people to feel, but it's being able to kind of know yourself in a way and being able to put that forward and actualizing, you know, what's inside you to to make it into a piece of art. So,
and then somehow turning that into food and putting it in your stomach.
Yes. Well, yeah, that's a whole nother story. I would say that, you know, if I didn't have what I thought were some, because I came from a family, like I said, like where, I mean, I wasn't really like, my parents are like, oh, you have to, you know, you should go be an artist. You should go be, I didn't have that upbringing. My parents were fairly, you know, normal, somewhat conservative, you know, but they wanted their, you know, kids to make a living. It wasn't, you know, I'm the first artist type in my family. So I guess part of that journey, part of getting over what I had to at that time was kind of, you know, shedding that upbringing that I had, or at least some of it. And, oh, wait, I was going somewhere with that. That's my train of thought.
It's cool, man. It happens.
Damn.
It happens.
Anyway, so all of us. I think we've covered the heavy stuff.
I'm sorry, I'm in a mood. I get like that and I talk a lot. I'm sorry, I'll just shut up. But
what are you working on now? You're getting ready for another album or just writing right now, or what are we up to?
Yeah, well, I am planning some touring stuff. We're getting on the road next month. I go to this songwriter festival in Wisconsin, and then I'm going to be doing like an East Coast tour with another songwriter friend. And then after the summer, then I am going to start thinking about the next project. I have a bunch of music in the works, like a lot of music in the works. Some stuff basically that I've been working on for quite a while. I just need to kind of put aside some time and really finish some stuff, because I have a lot of stuff in progress. And there's that great, I don't know who I heard say recently, but a song can take anywhere between an hour and forever. And I'm known to be slightly slow in my writing, and you know, occasionally things that get stuck in like the 2/3 to finish and then kind of linger there for a while. So I'm hoping after this summer to get some time and really go away somewhere and hopefully just crank out a lot of these things that have been kind of there, but not, you know, just basically lyric wise needing to, because I have songs that are finished music wise.
No, me.
Huh. Lyrics are the hardest thing for me and take the longest. Huh. So I really need to, and it's actually become increasingly hard for me to write in New York. Like, I feel like at this point I'm so busy with a lot of other things here. I mean, and doing, you know, the promotion for the gigs and playing gigs, and then so it's like at a point where I feel like I need to kind of go away to really get some stuff done. So I'm thinking in the fall I'm going to try to do that, and then really in earnest.
You know where I hear a great place for writing music is? You know I'm going to say it.
Kansas.
What's that?
There you go, yes. Logan.
What?
I said, you know where a great Come place for writing here. Music is? Kansas.
Come on in.
If you want no distractions, here we are.
Yeah. Well, that's really, you know, I just find that, you know, with everything these days and you know, the connectedness, it really is harder to find quiet time, you know, and being in New York, obviously, is a busy place.
Yeah, there I could steal Wi-Fi from thousands of people. I wouldn't even need to pay for the internet. Yeah, Craig, sorry if I went dark on you there for a little while. I didn't even know.
Carpenters can do fancy stuff, too.
Yes.
What was that?
Carpenters
can do fancy
stuff. He's saying the carpenters can be artists, I think.
Oh.
Yeah. Depends on the true carpenter, but yeah.
You guys want to talk about politics?
Nice segue.
I think we might leave it there and let Craig get back to having an enjoyable night, because you're an hour ahead of us, so it's... We'll let you get back.
Yeah, and I got laundry in the dryer.
Yeah, you're gonna have to refluff them.
Yeah,
but I've enjoyed your music.
Unlike our conversation, Craig's music is great, and everybody should listen to it. Literally, everybody. Jesus, get on the horn. Listen to this music. Everybody.
He listens to all music. Probably a lot of it is in the group.
I hope he doesn't listen to all music. Probably, because some of it is gonna offend him.
Is there anything else you want to plug, Craig, before we sign off? I know we have your website is craiggreenbergmusic.com.
Yeah.
Do you have your YouTube channel and Facebook accounts?
Yep. You've seen, I believe, the most recent videos. The last one I put out was about 2 months ago. for that song Death on the Liberty Line, which I think you said you was going to be on this at some point. Yeah. So, yeah, I'd like people to check that out. It's pretty apropos with what's going on in the country right now, I like to think.
If you go to YouTube, you can type in Death on a Liberty Line. You can get the video from Craig. And then from there, you can actually subscribe to his channel. I think it's just your name, isn't it? Craig Greenberg?
My YouTube channel is just C. It's the first. It's C Green B.
Okay.
Huh. Yeah. Which I probably.
Yeah, you've dropped the ball on that one. Way to confuse people.
Perhaps come up with a better name for that. It's probably not helping my cause very much. But
no, I'm just kidding. Craig Greensburg, C Green. Wait, what?
C Green B. It's yep. C my Green first B. letter, my green? First name, it's and the B. first six letters of my last name. It's pretty terrible. I wasn't thinking very commercially at the time, so.
Well, if they go over to YouTube and look up That Girl Is Wrong For You or Death on the Liberty Line, you'll be able to subscribe that way by hitting the link.
So. There's one other new video. Okay. I just did this home recording of a song that's not been released. Song called Aberdeen.
New content.
That was just a home recording, just me solo on the piano, like voice and piano. Got a little bit of... it was for a piece that was done in American Songwriter. Sneak that in there. So that's a song called Aberdeen. That's also on YouTube. It's a nice little home video there, and with a little bit of production. And it's check that out as well.
Cool.
Definitely.
So anybody that's interested in Craig's music, I equate it to basically kind of like Randy Newman stylish. Lenny, I think, probably hit it better with a little bit eclectic. We have the rock pop stylings. You can go to CraigGreenbergMusic.com. You can pick up his physical album off there. Also, you can get it
find him on Facebook, follow him on Twitter.
Yes, you can get his digital on
Instagram,
Bandcamp, and Instagram. Look up him on Facebook. You can find him there. But the album is The Grand Loss and Legacy. We enjoyed it here. I definitely loved it. So give it a great big hurrah for me.
Just because I don't say it as much, I liked it too.
That's pretty good, I thought. But Craig, we appreciate everything you've done for us and coming on tonight. You've gone well above and beyond for us, so thank you for doing this for us.
No problem. Thanks for having me. It's been fun.
And like we said, check out his YouTube channel. He's got his videos up there, and his latest, as he said, is Aberdeen. So be sure to check that out on YouTube for him as well. That's going to do it for us. We've been having fun here tonight. We hope everybody's been having fun out there.
Well, I haven't.
For us.
Just kidding.
Lenny hasn't, but I have, so I've been having a great time.
No, I've been having a great time. I'm just in a mood. I'm very reactionary tonight. Leave me alone.
So, everybody, enjoy. We will catch you on the flip side.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Comic Pop Library. We welcome your comments and suggestions by emailing us at admin@comicpoplibrary.com. All emails submitted become the property of Comic Pop Library and are subject for use in our show. We would also appreciate it if you would spread the word about Comic Pop Library by posting about us on Twitter, Facebook, or just tell someone about us. This podcast is not endorsed by any publisher, distributor, or studio, and it is intended for entertainment and information purposes only. The views and comments of the show hosts are their own and are not reflective in any business, entity, or organization associated with ComicPopLibrary.com.